From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 28th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. I'll tell you all about the Farm Assets Conference, how to pick up your tickets. You can do that, by the way, at willag.org. They're just $30. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast. To that with Agribull's Eric Snodgrass during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 28th day of October. Let's check in now with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Great to be with you again. Happy Friday to you, Todd.
Yeah, happy Friday. Soybeans down today. However, they finished above $10. I suppose that's a win for the week.
Yeah, I mean, we had the market stay higher, and it was led by the meal, which, you know, tends to be a demand-driven market. And, you know, where we had the early part of the trading week, the markets tended to appreciate what was going on in the vegetable oil market in Asia and the demand there. I think they started to realize how tight the stocks were globally for soy meal as well. So I felt like the product market shared in the strength for the soybean complex. Biggest factor that hit us the second half of the day was the news of the FBI reopening the Clinton email investigation. And I know that sounds kind of kooky, but it really became kind of a launch pad for kind of a financial earthquake or a mini black swan event. Volatility, the VIX index jumped 10%, stock market started to make new lows, and all of a sudden it seemed like we went through about an hour, and it happened to be the last hour of the grain trade where the market shrunk back. The dollar went lower, crude oil went lower. Everything seemed to really give up gains and change from what their weekly pattern had been. It leaves us kind of technically vulnerable, unfortunately, on the weekly charts, and especially as we head into first notice day for the November contract in soybeans here today. And obviously, we have month end on Monday, but bean deliveries, I think, are going to be extremely important to not just the futures trade, but also the cash trade and whether some of the basis around the country starts to come around a little bit for the soy complex.
And how will that work?
Well, it, you know, delivery is a seller's option. And so if you are a commercial grain seller that has extra soybeans right now, and you look at the premium in November bean futures compared to the discount in the cash market, you can and have the option to throw that onto the market thinking you're going to get a better price after getting through all the delivery transactions. Some think that the carrying charge in the January being 11, 12 cents is going to limit that, but you can kind of tell by the expectations. Some people are at zero on deliveries. Some are at up to 1,200 contracts on deliveries. You can tell by this wide example that the traders really don't know how heavy the deliveries are going to be. So the more we go over 1,000 deliverable contracts this evening, I think the more the trade's going to realize maybe it is going to be a heavy delivery November contract, and it could cause us to break back below $10. Then that opens us up on the technicals right as we go into month end. So kind of on a tough patch right here, thanks to this crazy email investigation being reopened up.
Will the January contract follow November lower if this all transpires?
Yeah, I think it will, Todd. I think one of the maybe bright spots in the trade this week was the idea that the elevators were hitting the corn basis extra hard this year in kind of an oddball scenario because the bean deliveries were coming in pretty heavy. And I think elevators probably even shrunk back from wanting beans, and that backed up the farmers a little bit here. And there's some short-term bin space the farmers have, but I think it's very short term, and I think they've got about 10 days to get this worked out. So the farmer's going to have to make a decision whether they store longer term or go ahead and dump it into the market. So yeah, it could really impact the January as well. And you know, with us being 76% harvested around the country, we're through the harvest pressure in the futures market, and so it's not looking too bad as far as the market wanting to find a little bit of short covering. If we could get this cash and this deliverable situation and especially the chart technicals on the monthly chart to work in our favor.
And corn less likely to move, it appears. It's not budged a lot, not nearly as far along either as in harvest, still about 10 or 12% behind the soybeans on that run.
Yeah, and I'm still picking up pretty strong indications that while some areas of the central and western corn belt are near 2014 levels, very hard to surpass it in a wide area. And since that was 171.4, I think it was, for the national average back then, it still calls into question for me whether we really have a 2014 corn yield out there. Probably the biggest feature of the corn this past week and going into next week is we did lose support on the wheat chart. We went down below the 415 breakout point on Monday. We tested it yesterday to try to get back up above it. We failed and ended up going back below 410 on today's close. So we were down 6 cents on the week. Doesn't sound like a lot, but on the weekly chart, it doesn't look very good again. So I think the corn was kind of held back, and we saw the trade instead buy beans and sell corn as a result of the wheat technical. So I'm kind of back to where I was three and a half weeks ago, that if we want 385, 390 March corn by mid-November, we got to get that 420 level, you know, back as support in the soft red wheat.
Any final thoughts before I let you go?
I would say also the soybeans, probably one thing I didn't cover, and maybe to a lesser degree the grains as a whole. I don't want to sound too bearish here, but I didn't like the technical close, and I didn't like the fact that the crude oil slipped below $50 on the close, and we're going to be down about 4% this week. The 50-day moving average is just below today's low and today's close, so we want to watch that and not have the outside markets hurt us. And also, it looked like we wanted to see a little bit of profit-taking in the feeders. Fat cattle may have hit a near-term top if those feeders want to unwind any more on Monday.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's check the weather forecast now. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's from Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. What do you see?
Well, Todd, if there's one thing in the forecast that we all need to be paying attention to, it's the heat that's coming. You know, over the last couple of days, we've been watching the model forecast produce a pretty consistent picture about what the rest of October and the very beginning of November is going to look like. We're seeing another large ridge that's taking shape in the central United States. And with that ridge, we're going to see some southerly flow, and that southerly flow brings the heat back into our region. Now, it's going to feel pretty nice because about this time in October and the beginning of November, we usually get pretty cool. So we're going to see temperatures that might be 5, 10, maybe 15 degrees above average at times. Now, the kids are going to love it, and that's because of Halloween coming up. It's going to be nice and warm, and right now we're projecting, you know, a dry Halloween around here. There might be some precipitation moving through the northern part of the Midwest late in the weekend and the start of next week. But, gosh, right here in central Illinois, we might not see rain again maybe until next Thursday. So it's dry and it's warm, and that is the biggest picture that we can kind of paint for the weather going on right now. So I want to tell you something I want you to watch. So yeah, I'm right now in out in the Pacific Northwest, been in four states over the last 4 days, Montana, Idaho, Oregon, and then Washington today. And I'm going to tell you, out here, things have been soaking wet. And why I think this is important for the Midwest is because the jet stream across the central Pacific Ocean, in the north central Pacific, I should say, is really, really going. And we're going to be seeing that jet stream obtain some incredible speeds over the coming days. I'm talking wind speeds about 6 miles above our heads out on the west coast, approaching 200 miles an hour. Now, why I'm so concerned about that is that that tells me that the Pacific jet stream is really starting to crank up. And the moment that we start to build in some cooler air into Canada, that jet stream can work with that and really start to push that cooler air into the central United States. And this is just kind of a precursor for what I'm thinking that November and December and points beyond might look like. So when we kind of look a little bit long term, there's the potential again for the second half, maybe the third and fourth week of November, to see a return to not only seasonal temperatures for that time of the year, but the potential for some significant cooler air. Now, if I use persistence as my guide, we have seen since last June persistent ridging in the central part of the United States. So that's an important thing to consider as well, which means it's going to take a long time to break down the weather patterns that we've been experiencing. But I'm watching the Pacific jet stream. Got to be watching for it to be able to push the weather systems that we've been having around here out of the way. So keep a very close eye on that. Another thing to keep watching is La Nina. So right now, the current La Nina that's coming through is very weak. I know there's going to be a lot of talk about it, controlling our winter weather, but please remember that it's weak right now. I compared it just the other day to the 2011 La Nina, which is our most recent kind of decent La Nina event, and it's nothing by comparison. 2011 was a very, very powerful La Nina. And why I bring this up is because there's a lot of concern right now, especially in the commodity markets, on what we're expecting to happen coming out of Brazil. And with that weak La Nina, they have a lot less stress in their weather in Brazil. If it was a strong La Nina, we'd be talking about drought and heat, but it's not, and therefore it's a smaller player in their weather. So we kind of think more globally here. I would say that the start of the Brazilian growing season has gotten off to a good start. Over the next 10 days or so, they're expecting quite a bit of precipitation, not so much that it's flooding, but a lot for that pre-plant and that planting process. So that's kind of a summary of what the weather's going on all over the world. But I'll tell you this, get ready for a nice warm stretch of days here. And like I said, probably won't rain again until next Thursday.
Okay, Eric. Hey, thanks so much. Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible from right here in Urbana-Champaign. Joins us each and every Friday afternoon to take a look at the weather forecast.